How do you price an ad on your channel? That's probably the most common question we get from other creators. And it was the biggest question we had when we first started on YouTube. So we're hosting a live workshop on how to price yourself. This is everything that we've learned in the past 13 years of being on YouTube and our simple three-step process that'll help you develop concrete pricing. So if you want to join us for this live session, just go to colinandsamir.com/live. Enter your email and you'll get all the information about our live event on May 9th. All right, hope you enjoy this episode of the Colin and Samir Show.
Jokes are kind of like magic tricks in a way.
Yeah. TikTok, my friends.
I only know one emotion, and it's just angry.
You're a houseplant. Sit there, shut the f up.
Somebody's got to go. Somebody's
got to go.
So, like, once it comes out on Netflix.
If it comes out on Netflix.
If it comes out.
Who knows?
Okay. Who knows? Cut got the it. Check.
Real quick, before we get into this episode, I did want to mention that there is explicit language throughout the interview. So just be aware of that. All right. Enjoy the show. What was the business of comedy pre-YouTube? Like, how? What is the business of comedy?
Okay. So business of comedy pre-YouTube was you go around, you tour, you do these kind of like weekends, right, at these comedy clubs. And a lot of times those people might not even know who you are. There was a time where like you could get people out to a comedy club because you were in a commercial. Like there were just so few famous people, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like back in the day, really there was like a handful of them, right? So if you were like in a TV show, maybe for a couple episodes, people are like, oh yeah, that guy was in Sopranos for like three episodes. Like let's go see him this weekend. And now it's changed, you know, monumentally. I mean, you guys probably have been part of this as well. Like you guys are famous within your niche, right? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure you've experienced like, you'll be at like Starbucks or something like that. And somebody will walk up to you like, holy shit, Colin is here. And then everybody else in the Starbucks is like, who the fuck are those guys?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But that is new fame.
Right.
Yeah. Right? Because
it's actually a really comfortable type of fame.
Because you can walk around and be normal, but you still get that pat on the back like you're doing something good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the perfect version of it. Why are we finding this? So basically what happened was, is like as a comic, you tried to get like a half hour special on Comedy Central and then maybe like an hour special on HBO. That was like the premium.
When you're doing the comedy clubs, are you getting paid to do that? Or you get a cut of the tickets? Like how does that?
So like before you have like a door deal, you get like a flat rate for the weekend.
Got it.
And they would often like paper the room. Paper the room means they just hand out tickets. Or they're like cold calling you, be like, hey, we got this comic from the Chappelle Show or something coming. Like people show up. And you probably get like $2,000 a weekend. And you like fly yourself out there and stuff like that. It's not that bad.
That's not bad.
You can grind away.
Yeah.
You know, you do 50 weekends, which is a lot, but you're making $100,000, you know, you're traveling the world. It's great. Staying at these shitty comedy condos, but it's like the dream. It's awesome. And then as the internet introduced itself and as like, I guess like streaming popularity started to increase the visibility of certain people, podcasting, of course, like Rogan and Rogan putting other people on, like there was just way more draws. Mm-hmm. And then you could go from getting a guarantee in a weekend to a percentage of the door. And that changed the game. So people started going, fuck, I can make all this money doing the thing I love instead of having to like be an actor or something. Because comics, most of us don't want to be actors. I hate acting. It's a chore. It's the worst. And I'm bad at it. I used to hate it and I thought it was good. And that's like a really fun position to be in because you're like, I don't want to do this, but I could. But I'm bad.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really bad. Okay. So it's like awesome that podcasting is here. I only know one emotion and it's just angry. It's just whatever the line is. I'm like, I love you.
They're like, easy.
Wife.
Easy.
Yeah. Because it's the only like
back off with the love.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
I get it.
It's aggressive. Yeah. Right. But it's like anger is the only emotion that we can like all replicate instantaneously.
Yeah.
Like you can't, I think somebody said this. I don't know who said it, but like you can pretend to be angry. You can pretend to be sad. You can't pretend to be funny.
It's good. I like that.
You know?
Yeah. Like, yeah,
how do you pretend to be funny?
Yeah.
You either got it
it's
or you don't.
It's pretty binary.
Got it.
Yeah.
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 And with acting, it's even more difficult because, like, as an actor being funny, you're trying to not be funny. Like, you watch The Office?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve Carell is never trying to be funny.
Right.
That's why it's hilarious. He's just being dumb.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah.
Being a great actor is being dumb. Mm. If you're great at being dumb, you could be a great actor.
Interesting.
I know that sounds insulting.
Like that. No, that's good.
But like him, like Will Ferrell, they believe that they are these people and everything they're saying is like real. Whereas comedy, it's like you know you're being funny.
Yeah.
You're trying to be funny. It's like why Chris Rock is hilarious in stand-up, but like acting is just weird. He's still trying to be funny as a character. Mm.
Anyway, so when you're doing these clubs, is that the natural progression? You then get opportunities to act.
Yeah, but TV shows.
Like, who makes these decisions at that time, especially for like Comedy Central and HBO, like during that pre-YouTube era? Like, there's a specific person who's like, I will put you on Comedy Central.
Yeah, there's like tastemakers and there's like festivals. And like, if you're at this festival and the right people see you at the festival, then you might get these opportunities, et cetera. And then YouTube killed all that. I kind of saw this happening early, right? But like, essentially, like the comedy festival, the idea was like, you just get all these talented comedians in one place, and then all the agents and everybody, producers can go there, and then we can see everybody. And then once I saw YouTube, I was like, why would I fly to Montreal when I could just go on YouTube?
And I think even more so, it's like, is it up to the agents and producers if you're funny, or is it up to the masses?
It's often not even about being funny. It's like, what is popular? What is necessary?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, did a lot of Asians get beat up this month? Okay, we need to have some Asian stuff come out.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know what
I mean? Like, which is good. Like,
sure, sure.
We need to, hey, Fox is like, get an Asian show out. Yeah. We don't hate Asians, you know?
Yeah,
and
then
like, that's where you got to capitalize, not you.
Yeah.
But you got to capitalize.
No, but me too.
Do they know have an Asian guy on your team named Tiger?
Tiger.
Oh, stop it.
Yeah, Tiger.
Stop it. Cut it out, dude. Is that your real name?
That's my real name. Yeah.
Yeah, so you cut it out.
Yeah. Yeah, you
How real?
It's real.
It's like 100%.
It's 100% real. In Japanese.
Oh, it's like actually. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, my Asian name. Yeah.
We're diverse.
I respect that.
Yeah, yeah.
It means big river?
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
Okay, that I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's silly.
Okay.
But my last name is like a mountain of fortune, so it's like a river.
I didn't ask.
Yeah. Now you're taking liberties.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we get it. Okay, you got meaningful names. I'm Andrew. Yeah. It means nothing. Maybe white people do that to just cut this conversation out.
Right.
Like, what does Samir mean?
Well, my brother's name is Sahil.
Uh-huh.
Put together, it's Ocean Breeze.
Ocean Breeze. Are you ocean or breeze?
I'm breeze. He's ocean.
Oh, they cared more about you,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, yeah. I was second.
Yeah, that's
I'm
the
second.
Truth right there in the family.
I'm breeze. Yeah.
We could deal without a breeze, but not without the ocean. Yeah.
And then Colin, right?
Yeah, my mom got it out of a book.
Exactly. Yeah, it just ends there.
Right.
It's an Irish name, right?
I'm not Irish.
This is something white people have figured out. Pleasantries just go away.
Mm.
We don't need all the meaning and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Colin, he's probably Irish. I could give a fuck.
I'm not Irish.
Exactly. I don't care. You're white. Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Bro, right? If you're white, once you get to America, your past means nothing.
Yeah.
Unless you're Italian. And then it still does, but they make a big deal.
My last name is Rosenblum. So it's like Irish,
Jewish. Are you Jewish?
I'm half Jewish.
Colin and Jewish.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Now it's getting a little interesting.
Like, my name could be like Christian Rosenblum at this point.
Ooh.
Right? Like, it's ridiculous.
That might be the most Jewish.
Maybe.
I mean, Jesus was...
Oh, you're right.
True.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we brought
you. What do you think about
Whoopi? Maybe I need a rebrand.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
I'll think about it.
Yeah. Think deep. How old are you?
33.
I mean, that was when he did it.
Okay.
It's time to rebrand. You don't have it, dude. Yeah. TikTok, my friend. Okay.
All right.
So where were we? YouTube.
The business
comedy.
Of comedy.
Yes. Yeah. So everybody's trying to get like comedy specials. So you basically like hoard your material, hope to get the opportunity to have a special. And if people see your special, then you can maybe go tour and have like a lavish, crazy tour or become like a theater act, etc. The other way to do it was get a job in Hollywood acting for a sitcom or something like that, and then turn that into selling tickets on the road. And then the later iteration, my generation, there were these like weekly shows that would pop up on like MTV and VH1, like Best of the 90s, Best Week Ever, Guy Code, Girl Code was the ones out there. And they're essentially like what I call them like laundry shows. So it's like passive viewing. This is kind of what a lot of YouTube content is, you know, put on the podcast 2 hours, it's there, but you're folding clothes, et cetera. And I looked at all the comics that like were getting up in the comedy clubs when I was younger. And I was like, oh, all those guys are on these shows. And I was like, why? Ah, they're offering something to the comedy club. Like, people are familiar with them. They see them on TV. Maybe they'll come out. And I was like, I need to get into the comedy club so I can work on my material and I can be like a really good comic. And it's reps at the end of the day. How can I put in the hours?
Mm-hmm.
So that was my initial play. And then the game changed a bit. The circumstances changed.
What changed?
The industry in stand-up didn't really want to allow me to do stand-up. But allow is stupid. Give me an opportunity to do stand-up.
Who are what do you mean by that?
Yeah, who are the gatekeepers there?
I don't know. A bunch of sluts. No. I'm
just, I don't like know you can't get do. Up in the comedy cellar.
Calm down, Tiger. No. I tease. They could be nice people. I don't even know if they're sluts at all. They could be.
Sure.
But no, they're basically different people in the industry, and they, I guess, had an idea of what the comedy should be right there. And there wasn't much pressure on them to deliver like numbers because nobody was really watching stand-up. Like stand-up wasn't paying the bills.
Yeah.
You know, like when you have a certain network that has to deliver, right? Like if you're, what's the network that the prank show with the guys from Staten Island is? It's awesome. I love these guys. I can't believe True TV, right? Like mm-hmm. they pay the bills on that network. Like I think they actually get a piece of all the advertising on the whole network.
Oh, wow.
Right. So like that's what was paying the bills.
Got it.
And with Comedy Central, it was probably Chappelle Show or I don't know. What are Tosh Point
South
Park.
South Park.
Yeah, like all these things. Right. Like so they were paying the bills.
Yeah.
And so they'd throw comedy on at like fucking midnight. Mm-hmm. And it was like, OK, nobody's watching that shit. Doesn't mean anything. But they weren't under pressure to deliver. So they didn't really want to like let me get on. There was different opportunities that like it became like really clear. Like, like super clear. Like there was a show the Comedy Cellar was doing and the Comedy Cellar would put me on every time to record and they would just cut me out of the show every time. And the Cellar would be like, why are you cutting me out of the show? Like, what's going on? Decisions, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, fuck these guys. So I couldn't really get into the traditional stand-up industry. So I had to kind of like figure out another way. And I was already kind of dabbling in the YouTube space. I've been doing the podcast with Charlamagne and I've been seeing like all the people that are actually like selling tickets on the road had like podcasts and like YouTube presence. I was like, okay, there's a shift going on here. What's going on? And I remember I was at my uncle's house and I asked his son, he was a kid, he was like 9 years old, and I asked him to put on the NFL playoffs. And I said, he goes, what channel is it on? And I go, ABC. And he goes, what channel is that? And I was like, oh, it's over. Like in that moment, right. I was like, it's over. And I literally like stood there for a second. I was like, oh, I got to rethink everything. TV's done. These kids don't even watch TV. It means nothing to them. They're somewhere else. Oh, he's on YouTube. He has his own YouTube page. He's 9 years old, uploading videos. Like the game has completely changed and I need to understand this new game. And nobody else is even trying to understand it because you get so indoctrinated in like the success model of your business. Mm-hmm. You go like, I'm a comedian. I must have a sitcom. I must do what Jerry Seinfeld did. I must have specials, right? And I knew that everybody was flowing in that direction. So I was like, holy shit, if I can figure out this new thing, I'm going to be like the first person in that space. Like this can like really work out. This is where everybody is going to be. It's the most accessible.
In that moment, how are you making money? Because I know you were in some of those shows on MTV, right? But is this after that?
I had like, I was in a sitcom, you know, I had other acting stuff. I was doing a podcast with Charlamagne, so I was making money from that. And then I was doing the road. I was always like a comic that was working the road.
Okay.
Like even from like maybe 3 years in my career. So I'd always been able to like make a living. I wasn't really worried about that. And I could take certain chances, maybe somebody in my shoes, like that didn't have those other streams of income could have. So I was able to just go, okay, I don't need to chase this.
But success wise, in your eyes, you're like, I'm not doing what I want to do yet.
I didn't, even now, I don't feel like I am. You know, like even now, like I think you always kind of move the goal, right? Like once you achieve something, you're like, okay, there's more to be achieved.
Mm-hmm. When you first started uploading to YouTube, were any of your peers like, yo, what are you doing?
Yeah. All of them.
Everyone was like,
thought I was an idiot.
That's dumb.
And I would tell them and I'd be like, this is it. Like it was Instagram and YouTube. I remember like the first video that went viral. It was a joke about how like, the food is better in countries where the women have less rights. And, and it went viral on Super Bowl Sunday. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. That like all these people could be posting about the Super Bowl. And they're like posting, it was on Reddit. And I was like, well, this is cool. And then I just started posting a clip every single week for a year.
Did you find that like Comedy Cellar not putting you up on Comedy Central? Was it because of the subject matter of your jokes? Well, like, did they feel like it was too far at any point? And then in contrast, that clip, like, was there a
connection between that? Of course. Yeah. I think Cellar wanted me up. Just to make sure we know, but the Comedy Central is the one giving pushback. But absolutely, yeah, they were putting this version of stand-up out there that just wasn't that funny. Mm. And it was just like super cookie cutter, very polite, very kind of like woke, not ruffling any feathers. And I just always found things funnier that were a little bit maybe darker, twisted, devil's advocate-y. Like, what's the worst thing that I can defend in a comedic way? Mm. And at the end of the day, I think most people find those things funny. Maybe they don't want to admit it in public, but in private, they're going to laugh. You know,
what led you to that side of comedy? Like, did you watch a certain comedian growing up that did that type of thing?
Really? I just think, I always thought that was just what was funny, man. It was just like, it's like a cool, fun, almost like intellectual exercise. Like, how do I defend this? You know? And I also would see, like, growing up in New York, you see like a bunch of different people, but you see a lot of people like pretending to be the person that they wish they were. Right. And I think that's a lot of like the, like we give a lot of pushback on like woke culture, but I think like being woke in certain circumstances makes sense. Like you're just trying to be like kind.
Yeah. It's like being empathetic, understanding. Yeah.
Literally
like,
is like that.
Considering someone else's feelings.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Like we should do that.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's when that becomes an extreme thing where, and this is on both sides, but like when it becomes extreme, it starts to lose all that value because it's almost condescending.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to protect you so much that you're an infant. You can't do anything to protect yourself. Well, like, I'm going to decide beforehand that you're offended by this joke.
Well, the protection becomes a part of their identity, right? Like I'm protecting you for me. Yeah. It's like,
yes,
not
it's selfish. You remove the tolerance. The cool thing about tolerance is that like you're giving other people potential opportunities, right? Mm-hmm. And if it goes so far as that you're just giving yourself the opportunity or at least giving yourself like the pat on the back, the satisfaction, like, it's just garbage. Like once I see that you're being fake, I like to take it away from you. Like if I know that you're being fraudulent about something, then I want to make the argument for the opposing view. Right. And I just want you to sit there and crumble. Mm-hmm. And that was fun.
So that clip going viral.
Yeah.
Was there like excitement? How did you feel about that? Was that a moment of like, oh shit, this could work? And was there pushback as well from people being like, that's too far. That joke's not funny.
That's a good question. I always knew it could work and I always knew that that's where the people were. And I just wanted to be where the people were. And I had like a self-reflection where I was like, I don't really want a sitcom per se. Like I did these things. Like I was leading a sitcom. I was in a fucking movie. I was doing these things. And I was like, I'm just doing this because I think that that's what I should do. You know, like a lot of people get married at 23 because they're like, that's what not everyone. But like a lot, they're just like, that's what I should do. And then like 33, they're like, fuck, why'd I do that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's just what everybody in my town did. And that's what, you know, was normal, but it's not necessarily what I wanted. And I think that being like removed from certain opportunities, I got to actually realize what I truly want to do. And then I was like, I'll fight for that. I'll work as hard as I can to fight for that. And just starting to like post and, you know, seeing this stuff on YouTube and seeing it get like this good reaction and like Instagram as well. And just like finding little things like subtitling a clip.
Sure.
Like just little hacks. It was like,
but did you have to start treating your jokes as almost less precious because you were putting them out on a more consistent basis? And you were talking about at the top of the show that, you know, once that's out, it's like a magic trick. Now everyone knows that one.
So basically I would say like people will maybe give me a lot of credit for kind of like transitioning stand up to like social media, like YouTube, Instagram, this kind of stuff. I wasn't the first person to ever put an Instagram clip up, not first person to put a clip up on YouTube. Maybe they saw my success like really only coming from that part of the internet and going, oh wow, there's freedom for me as well. Like I can also replicate this thing. I would say my effect on comedy and how it will be different like from now on would be, we are less precious about our material.
Mm-hmm.
So before that it was, I never share anything. I'm hoarding all the material for my special, then I'll release it. Now we look at our material as our greatest marketing tool. A great joke for me is something that can get people at comedy clubs or theaters or arenas, right? So I'm going to utilize the best marketing tool that I have, which is my humor. Fuck being an actor so I can be a comedian. Right. I'm going to be a comedian so I can be a comedian.
But is the pace then of like writing new material just way more intense? You got to be good.
You got to be good. It separates the men from the boys, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, realistically, I put a lot of like crowd work and stuff out there. And it's not because like when I go and do my show on the road, I have like an hour of jokes. And then I also fuck around with the crowd. But the crowd work is something I can give away.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away
singular,
the jokes.
Yeah.
Jokes take 6 months to make. I can't give it away in its infancy. You know?
Yeah. And even your podcasts are that way, right? Like they're natural jokes that are coming in the moment and you're just giving that away.
Yes.
Right.
So it's definitely beneficial for people who like can create on the fly, are witty, and also, you know, can grind. And the guys that used to be doing the same set for 2 decades, and there are these guys, they just can't exist in this environment anymore. They just can't.
that success as you start doubling down on posting clips on YouTube, does that lead to, what does that lead to? Is that more butts and seats on tour? Yeah.
I put out my first special, right? It was called 441. I just basically did like these four comedy clubs in one night in New York. And it was like, what is the experience of a New York comic? And the weekend after I put it out, I sold out a comedy club in San Diego. And I thought it was kind of like a coincidence. I was like, maybe I'm bigger in San Diego than I realized and blah, blah, blah. And then the next weekend I went to Columbus and I sold out a club and I was like, the fuck is going on?
You're like, I'm definitely not big in Columbus.
I knew I wasn't big. It was like a tough market. Yeah. And I'm like, what the fuck?
No one's big in Columbus.
Exactly. And it was like, next one, it was another one and like just kept kind of building. And I was like, holy shit, is this because of the YouTube special? And what I realized is like, people only know you for what you give them. Before that, people maybe knew me from TV, right? Mm. Doing comedic things on TV. Maybe they knew me from a podcast, but they didn't know that I did stand up at a high level until I showed them. Mm. So me, I'm just thinking in this old model, which is you see me on TV. You must come see me when I'm in Columbus. Why would I put on clothes, get a babysitter, do all these things if I wasn't 100% sure this guy's funny? Like, that's a big investment, right? It's like, I'm not going to a restaurant without going on Yelp, right? I need the review before I go out there and dedicate my night to you. And then once I start realizing, yo, you just show them that you're good, that's way less of a risk. And then they show it to their friends. Well, their friends go, well, yeah, this guy looks funny. Now you're not the asshole that dragged them to an unfunny comedy show. They thought that you were funny and they also were in. It reduces all pressure.
Was there any pushback though of like you're calling this a special, but it's on YouTube?
I called it an experience.
Okay.
I use the word experience. And one, because it wasn't traditional in that like it was four different clubs.
Yeah.
But also two, it wasn't that long. It was like 15 minutes or something like that. Like I was just like, let me just call this an experience. And as far as pushback goes, no, I don't think that there was, just because it wasn't on like a network.
Yeah.
So you had the podcast with Charlamagne, you had your own YouTube channel. When did it go from those two things to more shows and more shows and more shows?
It was just putting out the stand-up, man. It was putting out stand-up. And like the beautiful thing about YouTube and just social media is like the algorithm is your marketing. Hmm. You know what I mean? Like you don't need billboards. The algorithm is the billboard. Like everything you guys click on in a day is going to drive other stuff to you. So I put out all this stuff and like a lot of things that happened to me are incredibly lucky, right? Like and just serendipitous. But like I put out all these clips and all these things happen. And the clips would tap into these different communities and they would create these like portals to me, right? So instead of there just being like one special that sat on HBO and like maybe you bumped into it when they replayed it once, I would have a clip that was like really popular amongst like the Romanian community. Mm. And they would watch that clip and be like, oh, he's really funny. And then YouTube would serve him up a bunch of other clips that I had. And I kept putting out content and creating more and more portals for different people to come. And the crazy thing is when we started releasing the crowd work, we didn't know this, but like if I'm making a joke about you, Samir, right? And I'm talking about you and like your community and I'm just like a curious guy. Like I'll ask you questions about you and like I want to know things and like I might have like a little bit more nuanced take on like your culture than you would expect from me. And we started, you know, doing these jokes and like putting out these jokes about, so they would tap into these niche communities that weren't really represented.
Interesting.
And then those communities, because they were so tight knit, would share it like crazy around those communities. So I had a joke in the crowd work special. I remember specifically it was about this Sikh guy, right? And Punjabi guy, right?
Just to be clear, Sikh, turban.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. And it was just, it was about the bracelet that they wear, the kata, right?
Yep.
And like this joke went crazy in the community and everybody was passing around like, oh, he knows these things, blah, blah, blah. We didn't know that. Like that wasn't like put out because it would tap into a community. It was just a natural thing that kind of happened. And then that community ended up really showing tons of support to me and coming out to shows.
Because they're seen also.
They're seen.
Like you're observing something and you're willing to say it.
Bro, and here's the thing. They're seen as their culture is. They're not seen as like, oh, here, you're going to play a white or black guy on TV. Like a lot of times what happens with like Indians, it's like you get to be the black Indian guy or the white Indian guy on a sitcom, right? You don't get to be the fucking turban wearing Punjabi Sikh dude who's just about his community. And like being reflecting like that, I guess was kind of cool. And then keep in mind, like millions of people are viewing it. So it's not like you know, it's a picture posted to some random Instagram. You see a big number, mm-hmm. you know, a bigger number than you're going to see watching some show on HBO even. Granted, it's a 3-minute clip and whatever, sure. but mm-hmm. still like,
yeah.
all of a sudden you're like, there's like this 15 minutes of fame thing. Like your friends are messaging you, dude, were you in this clip today?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like it's this crazy phenomenon. So that would keep happening with all these different communities. And we were basically planting all these seeds without even knowing it. And then when I went on Rogan, I mean, that was just, this is Rogan, heyday, YouTube.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I go on there and I say, Netflix is dead. Everybody's fucking dead. YouTube is the future. It's the only way you can do it. And nobody had really said this on, especially on a platform where like comedians would watch religiously.
Right.
And the reaction was really interesting because I got his algorithmic boost. So I went on the biggest show.
Yep.
And then the people enjoyed the episode. So the YouTube algorithm is just like, oh, I guess the people mm-hmm. that like this like his content. And I had a lot of content.
Yeah. You had a base. Yeah.
Huge. A farm.
Yeah.
Right. And all those seeds were planted. And then shit that had very little even do with comedy that I did started going viral. TED Talk.
Your TED Talk's great, by the way.
That had
fucking great TED Talk.
Yeah. 50,000 views. I go on Rogan within weeks, 1 million. Mm. So it was like the algorithm. Basically, this is what it was almost like. All these people existed on the internet that liked my stuff, but didn't know I existed.
Yeah. And here's the thing about YouTube, though. It's not just algorithm. It's also a search engine.
Yeah.
You put in your mm-hmm. name, and then there's just pages and pages that you can go through.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, I think, what people forget about the other platforms, too, is that YouTube's a search engine. It's the second biggest search engine in the world.
100%.
You search Andrew Schultz, and there it is, right?
That's why everything I think the video podcast is so important.
Yeah.
And that's why I immediately invested in video. I was like, they'll never be able to just search us randomly while looking for an audio podcast, but they can bump into an episode. Mm-hmm. You know, Charlemagne's one of the biggest voices in hip hop history. Mm-hmm. So if Charlemagne has a hot take about something and a clip of that goes up, that could go viral. Those are people who can find our podcast. How can we be searchable? How can people find me?
So you kind of pioneered this shift from, you know, focus on quality to focus on quantity to get to the quality, right?
The thing about
Does that make
it,
sense?
Yeah. The thing, I couldn't reduce quality though.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, and that's the thing, was like really just important and valuable to me. Like the experience viewing it had to feel like you're there. And one thing that I would watch in old specials, and they even do it to this day, and I tell every one of my buddies that's doing a special, even if it's with a network, I go, you have to mic the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comedy is tennis. It's comedy is pong. It's an energy exchange. I mean, you might not be talking back to me, but like I'm saying something to you and you need to give me energy back.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, the person watching at home is cringing, even if it's hilarious, right? So like, even in my earlier stuff that I was putting out, like I actually, this is another way I got lucky. Instead of filming this thing in a theater, blah, 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 I'm filming these tiny intimate comedy clubs. But what happens? The recordings feel intimate. That camera that's set up is only 10 feet away from me. You could hear all the people in the audience laughing loud. You're in a theater, there's some big swooping crane. You think that camera's picking up some girl in row 13 laughing? Not a chance. They're getting this mic, maybe some room tone, and you're up there and it sounds like you're doing jokes and they're not giving you any reaction. You sound really like you're bombing. And then the people watching at home are like feeling uncomfortable and they turn it off. Whereas if you watch my clips even earlier on, it's like you could hear people like around you. You could hear a girl just go, ha ha.
Right.
You're like, oh, fuck, this feels comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's like the transition in entertainment from this passive experience to this active experience, right? I'm searching for Andrew Schultz. I'm actively wanting to participate in the content. I can comment and be like, that was hilarious and talk to someone else in the comments, right? And so it's an active role. I want it to feel more like I'm there. I don't want to passively view this anymore.
And even from like the sitcom to where we are now today on YouTube, the sitcom is like, I'm going to tell you when you're supposed to laugh.
YouTube,
which is just like, no, people are laughing.
Yep. Yeah,
like that's just what's happening there, right? Like it's that's so like true. Everything. It's just more real.
Yeah, it's more real. It's more authentic. There's more freedom. And like with authenticity, you need less, it needs to be less shiny.
Yeah.
You know, like when things are, you know, Mark who's here back there, when we were doing the crowd work special, he had a great idea. In the beginning of the crowd work special, there was like, we're just in the green room And we did plan on doing it that weekend. We had no clue. It was Alex's idea who was shooting it. But when we were filming the intro to it, Alex is like, yo, you should just, you know, like do a thing where you like riff and then we'll turn it into something. We filmed it once where I basically go, okay, I'll just try it out. And then I walk on stage. We filmed it once, like a perfect shot, right? The next time we filmed it, it was like a little crooked. You could see like a coffee cup or something in it. And it felt
real.
Real. It felt like it was just in the moment. Like, and maybe subconsciously people tapped into it. Maybe people called it bullshit. And you're like, yeah, you're faking this and trying to do it. But like, there's something beautiful about authenticity. It's like a fight video. I don't need a fight video in 4K. Yeah. Some kid is punching their teacher.
I kind of want a grainier and shake
it. Shake it up. This is real, right? If it's on a gimbal, I'm like, nah, this is a setup, dude. Right? So we crave
you
that authenticity.
You tried too hard at this.
Yeah.
You wanted that too much. Yeah. Well, I heard you call authenticity a sharp knife.
Yeah.
And maybe it was in the TED Talk.
No, this is probably recently. Maybe I said it before. But
it was
like,
in reference to Larry David. And his type of comedy.
That was a good
Could you explain that?
Yeah, he's just, it's just like Larry David is I don't know which one is the id, the ego, or the super ego, but the one that's unfiltered. Like it's just your feeling, the id, I think it is, right? It's just like unchecked. And most of us have a feeling and then we check it, right? Which is good because we have empathy for the people that we're interacting with. Larry's the opposite of woke, right? Like Larry is, I have no empathy for anybody. I feel something and you need to know it. And we might think the behavior is deplorable. Deplorable is maybe a lot, but we might think the behavior is annoying.
Yeah.
But we relate to the feeling. And that's comedy. Comedy is feeling. All these jokes back in the day, the Borscht Belt guys were like, take my wife, please. They don't really, we're not laughing because somebody wants you to take their wife. We're laughing because we've had that moment where like, just take her, right? Like, and I think that's what people mistake about comedy. Comedy is feeling. It's not reality. We love our wives, right? We love them more than anything. If anybody took them, we fucking kill them. I have to kill somebody.
Right.
But we can't have a feeling of frustration. And if comedy can tap into that feeling of frustration, then it's masterful. And I think maybe that's what I like about, that's what I like about Larry. And that's what I like about maybe a comedy that's a little bit more blue or lacks political correctness. You can't have a politically correct feeling. That doesn't exist. Yeah. Those aren't the things. Political correctness is correcting reality, which is good. Make it comfortable for everybody. But when we're doing this comedy shit, it's got to be the hot knife, dude.
That's what I like about, like, even Larry with Curb, for me, it's like he's acting out thoughts in your head.
Yes.
And that's what's fun about it. It's a hyperbole. It's not real. Some of those interactions can't exist in real life.
Yes.
Because we have a filter. But it's fun to watch what if they did. What if the feelings actually did take place
that's
in
comedy.
Real life.
That's what if.
Yeah.
I walked in here. I knew that he said his name was Tyga.
Yeah.
Right? I thought I misheard him. So I asked the white kid if his name was Tyga.
Right.
Yeah. Right? We went through it earlier. This is what and that is now if it was Curb Your Enthusiasm, he would say Tyga, and then I'd be like, what? Asian name Tyga? That's a little bit on the nose. Yeah, right? But there's the perfect reaction. Comedically, on stage, we're having a fun moment.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Off stage, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Sure.
Right? It's a discussion. But that is the authenticity, and that is the beautiful thing about comedy. And that is why comedy has to exist in this space where it's a little, quote unquote, dangerous. You know? And keep in mind, like when everything becomes acceptable and everybody feels pretty good, there are times of great acceptance. Like the comedy that comes out of those times is not like pointed political ideology or like statements. It's absurdism. Like Zach Galifianakis comes out of it, which is great too. He's funny. But like, when you're existing in like really tough political times where you can't say anything, you get Carlin, you get Pryor, you get Rock, you get the people who are going to speak to your feelings and find ways to use comedy to say the things that maybe we shouldn't say. You know what I mean? Like if you want to tell somebody the truth, make them laugh or they'll kill you. Oscar Wilde quote, right?
Right.
But that's the real.
So is that context of like kind of the sanctity in a comedy club feels like when I go to a comedy club, I feel that. I'm like, I'm here to experience some stuff that exists outside of the boundaries of my day-to-day interactions, things that are more okay to be said.
Yeah.
Does that translate to social and YouTube? And do you feel that same sanctity of like, you put something out on YouTube and the context is comedy, so it's okay. You can push the boundaries a little bit more. Or on Flagrant 2, you can push the boundaries a little bit more.
I think we can because we've curated an audience for it. Like, we also live in a bubble, though. And by we, I mean like specifically our podcasts and like the comedy that we're doing. Like we put out a specific type of comedy. You know, we've walked through the fire, if you will, like, you know, through any pushback about jokes, et cetera. And now people understand, oh, this is the type of comedy that they do. This is what you should expect. Like in a world now where everything is so politically correct, like people would never believe that I have the most fucking diverse audience in comedy. And by diverse, I don't mean just like you two guys looking diverse. I mean like politically diverse. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I can see that. I can see that though.
Like the left woke dude and the MAGA dude at the same fucking show laughing at the same jokes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like that to me means something is happening. That to me means we're tapping into like authenticity or like a feeling that is human that you
human
can't
emotion.
Deny.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's raw.
Also, you're not doing this in a vacuum. Like you've spent time doing crowd work. So you have an understanding when you're on Flagrant 2 of like where some sort of a line would be if there was someone here in person.
Yes.
Not that you're not going to cross it at certain times.
Yes.
But you have experience with someone directly looking at you in the face.
Yes.
And you said something to them and you're like, okay, that one worked. Like, that's all right.
Something you said right there is very interesting, is directly looking at you in the face. And I think that's why I might be able to get away with a lot of things that certain people can't. And it's because I'm often doing that joke to them.
Yeah.
You can't be offended on behalf of the person who's not offended.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can't be the white savior if you see the brown guy laughing.
Right.
Now you're just the weirdo that's ruining fun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If it's a white guy just speaking to a bunch of white guys and then they say something, then it's like, oh, that's inappropriate. What's going on? Like, it's almost to the point, and I think maybe the podcast really helps with that because by happenstance, like never once have we tried to like diversity hire or anything like that because like our friends were already diverse. Just the idea of going, well, we got to get an Asian in here. Like it would feel so gross.
Right.
But when you grow up with all these people, you never even think of that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I do think Akash and having an Indian is like a safe bet to run back and forth with an Indian.
You got the Indian, right? Yeah. Because he can tap into so many different experiences.
Big market too. Yeah.
Huge market.
Yeah.
Alex, you know, we have a lot of double ups. So we have Akash's Indian and Asian, kind of.
Okay.
But not really.
Meaning South Asian.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all played this game. We all know what Asian is.
We get
right?
it.
You're not Asian.
I'm South Asian.
But you are.
Southeastern Asian. Yeah.
I mean, I was corrected on that one time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like Russia's in Asia.
Sure.
But it's not.
Here's the thing.
I
was in an Asian Americans in entertainment feature.
Mm.
And Colin was like,
you stole a job.
What's the deal?
You were stealing jobs.
Yeah. You're stealing jobs from hard working Asians.
I was like,
how dare you?
What the fuck are you doing there?
I was like, what are you doing there?
Dude, and then I was informed by a fellow Asian.
Yeah, that I was out of line.
No. That's fucked up, dude. You took his job right there. Tiger could have had it, dude. Tiger, if you were at a Stop Asian Hate rally and a bunch of fucking furry hatted Russians showed up to that, like, we need to stop Asian hate. Would you feel like they were encroaching on your shit?
No, I love them, bro.
Oh, shut the fuck up, dude. This is why they're going to rule the world. It's not even a chance. 100%. You see that fake inclusion that he just did?
Yeah.
This is great. Okay. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I think with Flagrant 2, it's like there's everybody's represented. So like the jokes fly so freely. Like, I don't want to make jokes about black people if there's no black people there.
Yeah.
It's no fun. Where's the stakes?
Right.
Right? Like, I want it there, and I want to see, oh, is it so funny that even the black people got to go, nah, that shit is funny.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I want everybody represented. It also feels weird. Like, you're going to make fun of Jews and there's no Jews in the room? I think that probably is a problem.
Like, if you were in a room of all white people making fun of black people,
that's an issue.
Yeah.
It feels weird.
So, in that context, you have, you know, an Indian guy, a black guy in the room, you're making jokes about those cultures. Like, is the counter opinion that like, well, they don't represent everyone. Like,
of course not.
You're potentially offending a lot of people. And is that just the stakes of comedy?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or is it even just the stakes of independent production and distribution?
Yo, how about this? They have every right to be offended.
Mm.
Why are we encroaching on people's feelings? Be offended. That's cool. Just don't stop me from doing what I do.
Mm.
But no one's saying you can't be offended. Like the problem with offended is there's going to be somebody offended by everything, right? Like if you don't eat meat, like simply eating meat might be offensive. Are you going to stop eating out? No. And if that person stopped you from eating out, you'd be like, hey buddy, I respect your thing, but I do like eating meat. And that's the same thing with comedy. Same thing with everything. Like you have every right to be offended. Live your life. Don't watch my shit. Don't do whatever you want. I'm not encroaching on your feelings at all. Don't encroach on my activity.
Do you feel like not just the audience, but at times the platforms encroach on your activity?
For the most part, no.
No.
I mean, like we put out so much crazy shit and they've been like so supportive and like the benefits, like, you know, they outweigh any time we've been demonetized or any of these. Like, I know that comics, and I'm sure that I've done it too, like have made a stink about, you know, censorship and that kind of stuff. For the most part, I mean, it's been working out great. And if we have to cater to the rules a little bit, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm down to play ball.
I think that's important because I think what you have to realize is you are still building your business on rented land. Like that's still there. Mm-hmm. That's Google.
And
that's,
I'm not going to develop it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to develop it. Like I'm going to rent the land.
You got some rules? So cool.
They're the landlord. Yeah. Yeah. You follow the rules.
Yeah.
And if anything, the safeguard is Patreon or something like that. Like straight up directly supported.
Your safeguards their audience.
And they,
which is the audience, like whatever your connection is to them.
Yep.
But it's a closer connection on something like Patreon than it might be actually on YouTube.
100%. Right? And they'll take care of us. And those are the people that provide safety. If every advertiser wants to leave and they really rock with us and they make sure that we can continue to put out that content and we don't create with fear. Because I don't think you can create authentically with fear.
No.
I think it's a big problem with comics even starting out is they're so concerned about doing the jokes that work so they can get on stage and get these opportunities that they're not developing the jokes that come from inside them. And that's the only place the authenticity is going to come from. Like you can develop the tricks, but at the end of the day, if you really want people to like ride for you, like give up their weekend for you, you know what I mean? Like spend their savings, like do whatever they can to be there for that moment. It needs to come from in here. You know, you need to be saying shit they feel, but they can't articulate.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a new comic today also, if they were to do your style of comedy, might need 5 to 10 years to establish a fan base. Right.
Take your time.
And because of the environment, like the fact that they do have fear right now, like the only way to push through that is to actually just keep going for the next 10 years and see who's there with you.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing.
And like, you had that 10 years.
I not only had that 10 years, I grew up in New York City. I'm used to interacting with people that are different, maybe looking than me, and it meant nothing. So it's like, I have an extreme comfort in talking about these things because we just talked about them my whole life. And I was brought into this internet world through Charlemagne and a predominantly black audience, black and Latino. So it's like black and Latino people knew about me before white people. White people found out about me with Rogan, really. You know, maybe Guy Code and that kind of stuff a little bit, but the internet, like, so it's like I was already supported and pushed by black and Latino people before white people found me. So it wasn't like I had to go the other way. I had to prove that like I cared about that community or I wasn't a detriment to those communities. It was like, finally white people found out. And then black and Latino people were like, oh yeah, we've been fucking with Schultz forever. Mm. You know, it wasn't like they were trying to like, you know, they'll do it with actors. Like they'll put an actor in like a Fast and a Furious movie and they'll be like, oh, we really want to tap into these demographics. How can we do it? It was like, I did it by accident. It was like almost Jim Carrey. Like, remember Jim Carrey? Well, you guys probably younger than me, but like Jim Carrey was on the Keenan Ivory Wayans show. What was it called? In Living Color. So black people knew about Jim Carrey way before white people watched Ace Ventura. So when Ace Ventura came out, they're like, oh yeah, that's the funny dude.
Oh, interesting.
That's Fire Marshal Bill.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So like, and that's why I think he's just so universally loved, right? He wasn't like some like corny white guy that they had to like shove down black people's throats.
Right.
It was that funny white dude that then white people found out about. But that's just a unique thing that happened.
Yeah.
You can never plan these things.
So let's just take a step back. And when I went to your website, I was like, I you know, watch Flagrant 2, listen as well. I've seen your stuff, crowd work. Familiar with the show you do with Charlemagne.
Yep.
But then I saw all this other stuff. How much output do you have right now? Like how much are you putting out?
Now we're doing the pods and we're doing stand-up stuff. And even stand-up is reduced because I got to develop new material and we're putting out this tour and now we're putting out a special, which is an hour of material instead of like putting out these chunks regularly. Mm-hmm. But after, I imagine maybe you're talking about like the rants that we were doing.
Yeah, you were doing rants. I remember very clearly when you started during the pandemic, starting putting out stuff on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's actually when I really caught wind of what you were doing.
Yeah.
Was on Instagram and then I saw it go to Netflix and I was like, this guy's got a model that I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Like this is, you're doing something that I hadn't seen before.
The rants were a really interesting thing. Like everything you need to know about like your industry and like the business in general, like you can find out from people who have no clue about your industry or your business in general. Like I never ask people in the industry for their opinion or advice about content. They're too close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I just always ask casuals because they just word vomit things that can be so valuable. And even when I was doing like the YouTube specials, like I was like, what do you think about Netflix specials? Like, what is your thing? And the same reaction happened every single one. They were like, oh, I watched it for a little. I watched like maybe like 10, 15 minutes. It was funny. And I was like, oh, they're too long.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give a stranger an hour of my time ever. Well, maybe you guys today, but outside of that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a big commitment. An hour, dude.
Yeah.
But 2 minute chunks, 3 minute chunks, a minute chunk on Instagram. Like that's something I could give you. And that's kind of like informed my strategy. When it came to the rants, our whole monetization strategy was give away content and then perform on the road. Pandemic comes in. We're still giving away content.
Yeah.
Can't perform on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So we're like, fuck, we got to do something here. And I remember in the same day, three or four generations of people sent me the same video. And it was Bill Maher talking about why it's not bad or offensive to call something like the Chinese virus. And he did like a rant of like all with West Niles from West Nile, Connecticut. And the Spanish flu was found in Spain. It was like, this is not racism. This is just what we do when it comes to like, let's stop being so protective over things, whatever. And when I saw four different generations of people sent it and I was like, oh, there's a truth gap. People aren't being spoken for. And finally, when they are, they're feeling like they need to share it. I was like, okay. And Trump was out there saying that everything was fake in the media, and the media was out there saying that everything Trump said was fake, and people were in complete disarray and they just needed truth and they needed acknowledgement of their feelings, which I always have thought the majority of us, like 80% of us, do not care about left wing or like extreme right wing views. 80% of us sit pretty close in the middle and we sway left or right based on a couple issues mainly, but like for the majority of us, like I'm talking about people who have to pay their own rent. Like if you're a kid, your feelings are meaningless. They're meaningless. You know what I'm saying? Like all these kids in college, it's like, you don't pay for anything yet.
Right.
You don't have any, don't worry about the economy. You're
there's
not
no
part
stakes.
Of it.
Yeah. There's no stakes.
Yeah. You're a plant. You're a house plant. You get watered. That's it. Sit there. Shut the fuck up. If you are out there working and paying rent, then I want to hear your feelings about society and like how we can fix capitalism.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But when your millionaire father is paying for your college, I don't need you to tell me that like Marxism really figured it out. That Karl Marx, man, what a fucking genius that guy was. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that we're actually, to be honest, like I think the extreme left and right are like what's ruining patriotism. Cause they're stealing what I'm proud of America for. I'm proud of the tolerance, but they're so fucking tolerant. You identify as a ghost. Okay. Yeah. You're a ghost. Right. So now I can't even be tolerant without feeling like I'm one of them. And then the right is like stealing, waving the flag and freedom of speech. Right. But it's like, I love freedom of speech and I love the flag, but now I feel like I'm at a fucking rally.
Yeah.
So you stole it from me. Mm. What can I be proud of anymore?
Yeah.
You've taken my identity. So it's like, anyway, we're like, how do we service that space? And nobody was producing anything. And I sat down with Mark and I was like, yo, we gotta do something. We gotta do pieces. We'll write them and we'll talk about the issue of the week and we'll talk about it truthfully. Doesn't matter if We don't like that truth. We don't like that truth, but we will give the truth on the issue and we'll write jokes. And really importantly, remember I said there's that like energy exchange thing in the beginning. Mm-hmm. What I noticed when I watch all these like late night shows, they were still waiting for the laugh, even though there was nobody there. How fucking awful
that
is
was that? Yeah, that was really strange. Yeah. Seth Meyers, like in an attic.
There were moments of silence where they would just look and it was like they were hurting inside.
How stupid are these people that they don't realize that? Like they're stupid, right? Like you must watch you and go, I look like shit. Right?
Yeah.
So that's why we developed the fast style. I didn't wait for you to laugh. Cause you're not gonna, right? It's next line, next line, next line, next line. It's like, I can't wait for the laugh. I can't sit in the glory. At a comedy club, I can, because you'll hear it. But when you're just at home, it's me and you. I can't just deliver a bit and then stare at you. How you'll change a channel. It's just weird. It's creepy. Yeah. So we started to put out those pieces and it was just like the topic of the week. And it was great because we actually got to compete with the industry on like a somewhat level, you know, playing field. Like they were in their house too.
Yeah, actually, you had an upper hand because the thing is,
been there for a while.
The late night people were like, "Shit, how do we do this?" You were like, "I've been producing content, uploading it here. Like, I know how this works.
We know how it works."
Yeah, and they had to face this experience of just them and the audience for the first time. When that's what we do on YouTube, right? It's us
it
and the audience.
Exposed them. Yeah, I was so excited because the reality is if you put like me and my guys against any one of these teams, I don't give a fuck which team it is. Maybe. Honestly, maybe like Tosh's team would be tough because they're basically what me and my guys do. But like any of these late night teams will fucking break their backs, dude, at anything.
Yeah.
If you take 5 or 6 cameras and you have a fucking 1,000 people in a studio audience, you could trick people into thinking things aren't awful, you know?
Yeah.
But once they took that away, it was bad, bro. And we started putting out these pieces, man, and it was like...
And the audience doesn't lie, in my opinion. Like, you know, we just heard Emma Chamberlain on a podcast say that, like, her boss is the public.
Yeah.
That's our boss, right?
My parents would say that. She's like, you think you work for yourself. You have more bosses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody is here.
Work for the public.
Your boss is just public opinion.
Yeah. But that's liberating.
Fuck yeah.
Because it's just you and the public. So you make this on Instagram.
As long as you can handle public opinion.
Yeah, people like it.
Bro, do you ever watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Of course. Yeah.
They're right.
Yeah.
I want to test the public. They're always right.
Right.
The 70% of them, they always get it right.
Right.
I'd rather they be the boss than some suit.
Right.
You know, like, give me 70%.
Mm-hmm. I remember on a podcast, Jerry Seinfeld was asked.
Who's again, that?
Big time comedian, Long Island, New York.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Once you get off stage, do you ever ask other comedians, how'd that go? And he was like, what? And he's like, I know exactly how it went.
Yeah. I don't do that.
He's like, I know exactly how it went. Why would I ask anybody else?
You're asking how it went because you don't think it went well.
And he's like, naturally, comedians, they know at all times. Like, they get more feedback more often than anyone in any other industry.
Yeah. That's why it's hard, I think, for comedians, like, to be disagreed with a lot of times. It's like, you're getting applauded for, like, what you think. So, you know, I think sometimes comedians can be quite disagreeable because they have all this like data to prove that they know what they're talking about, which a lot of times we don't.
But it's also why you were the right fit for this experience of social, because you're on stage, you say something, you get immediate feedback. Was it funny? Was it not? You put something out on Instagram. Is it funny or is it not?
Yeah.
And then you move on.
Yeah. It's right? Like the industry's saying like, no, this type of humor isn't acceptable, but I'm going around sold out shows every weekend off of fucking Instagram clips.
Right.
So it's like, I think it's acceptable. I think it is. Mm-hmm. And I have some pretty good evidence to prove that these jokes are not only acceptable, but like what people want.
It just changed the model because before you're like, you write something, you hey, Netflix, can we do this? No, that's not very good. Let's not do it. Now it's just you write something, you put it out. Audience is like,
yeah,
that's good. Yeah. And then Netflix is like, oh shit, we need that because the audience thinks it's good.
That was the other thing. It's like when we started, I was like, if we do this for 4 months, we'll have a Netflix special. But we had to play some games in order to do that, you know, cause like one, I had said on Rogan that Netflix was dead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sure.
I gotta deal with that.
Yeah.
I have a tendency of saying things and then doing the exact opposite.
Right.
I do that a lot.
Right. Yeah, but that keeps people on their toes.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I just call myself a hypocrite.
Yeah, sure.
That's more interesting than watching someone who's consistent.
Yeah, fuck consistency, dude. Well, I'll consistently be a hypocrite, that's for sure, dude. Yeah. But I remember being like, yeah, we can turn this into a Netflix special. And here's the thing. Doing the Netflix special was the right thing to do, but it wasn't the right thing to do for the money or the numbers. That's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. We did the Netflix special because it qualified us in a certain space.
Social proof.
Yes. Like there's like you guys, myself, other people here understand the value of YouTube and the internet. We understand that that is the future, right? Mm-hmm. Like we are on the precipice. We're fucking, what is it? We're Rockefeller going, yeah, I got this. You know, Standard Oil is going to be the shit, right?
Right.
And everybody's like, ah, is it like, who even uses it? It's dirty. True. This oil. Yeah. We're like, oh, all right, fine, motherfuckers, you know, waste away. Yeah. But I understood that cosign from Netflix could change the perception of everything that we do. I can have the mayor on now because the mayor sees Netflix and goes, well, if they qualified him,
100%,
he must be real.
Yeah.
People will probably introduce you leading with that.
Sure.
They're not going to say, here's Andrew Schulz. He uploads Instagram videos all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Even though that's the more valuable thing.
100%.
Yeah. Like the growth would have been way crazier. Like we would have found a way to monetize it. We weren't even monetizing. Like, but we knew that in order for us to be like leveled up in the eyes of the people, that cosign was valuable. So we essentially did the deal for like the stamp of approval from casuals. Right? Mm-hmm. Hey, you got to check this guy out. Oh, what does he do? Oh, he had a Netflix special, but watch this clip. That's way easier.
Yeah. And then again, still, you have the base. Search Andrew Schulz. Boom.
It's the Michelin star.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so much easier for me to go to a restaurant if you just tell me there's that stupid star.
Right.
Right? So we got the star. But for a lot of people, like, oh, they just did it for the money and this and that. Not really. Like, money was good. Of course, we're going to get paid good. Yeah, but like, It was the social proof.
Yeah.
100%.
Which leads to the future opportunities. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Like we've been qualified. So it's like, what do we want to do?
When did you turn to Patreon? Because something that,
when Akash almost was homeless.
Got it. Okay.
I didn't want to do Patreon.
You didn't. Why or why not?
Like, I give it to the people. My strategy is always the people. You know, like, if we put our Netflix special on YouTube or whatever like that, it would have fucking exploded. Like, it would be even bigger than it was on Netflix. Netflix is what, 200 million subscribers? YouTube is what, 2 billion? Do the math.
So I'm curious about your opinion on Patreon, because it seems like that, from a comedy perspective, is like the clear-cut model now for
comedians. Great security. It was awesome. Akash needed it or he was going to go homeless.
Yeah.
We did it. We had this amazing base that really got behind us and fucking blew it up. It was awesome. And it gives great security and allows us to be flagrant and fucked up and crazy and make these jokes without worrying, like, if every advertiser pulls, I can't afford to pay all the guys.
Yeah.
It's awesome for that. The one thing is, like, I wish I could give that content to everybody because I want you to be seeing these things on a daily basis, you know? Like, we talk about this all the time, but, like, I don't want just one time a week for us to have flagrant two. I want Monday through Thursday, every single day. Let's just have it flooding the feed. You're not watching maybe the whole thing, you're watching a clip, but it's like we're just inundating your life, you know? So
yeah,
Patreon being behind the wall stops that, but it provides the security that we need to create in an authentic way.
What does Akash need to not be homeless, man? That's a lot of money for what kind of standards does he have?
Yeah, he was $100,000 a month. Yeah. And he's all right.
He did all right. Yeah, it was a good move. I'll be honest. It created some good security, but you can make those things with a, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to make money in investments. Don't ask me about anything.
I don't either. I know nothing about that. Yeah. I'm a mess with that. Yeah.
Complete.
Yeah. But it's old fashioned way. I work.
You can make money on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys can buy lighting. You can buy cameras. Yeah. You can buy a fucking tiger. You can do whatever you want and you can figure out how to make money. Right.
Yeah.
Investing in yourself. You can just put the fucking hours in. Right. Yeah. And that's kind of how we are. So it's like, we're just building out a fucking new studio now. Or like, we're going to, shooting the special, these things. It's like, it's weird. Like, I don't really think about the money, 'cause I got really great guys with me. And we can find ways where we can monetize stuff. But it's always first, what is the thing? How do you shift culture? How do you how do you become part of the conversation? How do you move the conversation? Like that should be the goal. And the money chases that, dude. Always chasing it.
So at the shows, are there a lot of people who are like, I know this guy from YouTube. Like, is that, oh, yeah. is that that's kind of
yeah, YouTube, the podcast,
like, that's like how people know you.
TikTok now, like wow. all these different, you know, social media apps. And then what happens is like you watch a few clips and then you start to look into the other stuff. Mm-hmm. So like the stand-up fan becomes a podcast fan.
Yep.
Or the podcast fan becomes stand-up fan mm-hmm. and TikTok.
Yeah, my entry again was like Instagram, podcast, and I would love to see you do stand-up.
You got
to
come out.
Yeah, man. I would love to see it.
That's the other thing that we're working on is like, how can we evolve every aspect of the business? So if it's like put more power in the creator's hands, especially as like a stand-up comic, then that's awesome. Let's do that. It's if it's make clips even better, if it's make stand-up specials like more dynamic, more different, like mm-hmm. that's what I'm so excited for the special that we're going to put out. Like it's just so cool.
When does that come out?
Haven't decided exactly just yet. Haven't decided exactly how we're going to release it, but we're working on that now. But like, it just needs to feel different. It needs to feel bigger. And the same thing with like the tour. It's like, you know, stand-up is done in one way for so long. And then sometimes tradition is good, but sometimes tradition like stunts growth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like how do we make this experience more dynamic? You're performing for 3,000 people. Like, how do you make it special for that person that's all the way up there and sees you this big, can't see your facial expressions or anything? Like, how can you make the show feel like a concert? How can they leave there going, holy shit, like, I got to come back.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's 70-year-old dudes that have been going to watch Fish for, like, the last 40 years, right? Like, these Grateful Dead fans. Like, what the fuck is happening at those concerts,
man? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Well, we need to figure it out.
We got to figure it out.
That's
out.
My Maybe job. Like, for yeah. real, like I won. Yeah, we should go.
I think what to it a is, dead show and try and figure it out.
You know, yes, I think dude. What it is, it's not necessarily about, like, my relationship to what you're performing. It's the people that you aggregate. So my relationship to the other person there, yeah. right? It's yeah. like, who are the type of people who go to an Andrew yeah. Schultz show?
Yeah.
Because that's now my community and I want to hang out with those people.
Yeah.
Because
I feel
that's
like myself, like yeah. unbeknownst to me, like when we were doing Flagrant, like that was even the messaging. It was like, everything was so politically correct. And it was like, yo, for a couple hours, just be yourself. Like
yeah.
laugh at the fucked up jokes.
Right.
Don't mm-hmm. look over your shoulder to see who sees you. And right. it's like, that's what I like the live show to be. It's like, I want you to, for this time, you get to be yourself. You get to laugh at every fucked up thing. And guess what? Everybody gets these jokes. Every group, nobody can be sensitive at that show. Women can't be sensitive. Muslims can't be sensitive. Jews can't be sensitive. Black people, brown people. Like nobody can be sensitive because you know it's coming for you too. And when everybody just kind of like puts down the shield and accepts it, and you see all these people from all the different like walks of life, like laughing at themselves and at each other. I don't know. For me, I just hope that they're like, I need to do that again.
Yeah, I want to feel that.
I need
yeah.
to feel that. That is so unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That space doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, doesn't exist.
So it's like, how can we have that like heart, and it's like, then how can we enhance it in every other way? Like we mm-hmm. were at the UFC the other day and we're just seeing certain things that they're doing. And we're like, why are we not doing this?
Like what?
Why yeah. is there not a camera on me when I enter the venue? Like when the fighters show
yeah,
up,
yeah, yeah.
you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. like uh-huh. why do we not have the fake backstage camera sure. as we're walking in?
Yeah.
And it's all, we already have the TV up there, not the TV, the projector. Imagine they're just waiting for the show to start. And then all of a sudden you see like the fake walk-in, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I've got my like bag yeah, yeah. in my hand, whatever.
People are going nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just like, cool. why are we not taking these things that work in all these other industries and applying them to ours?
Mm-hmm.
Like stand-ups, we can't be lazy, man. We got to fight for it. We're just going to let musicians have the best live show all the time. Fuck that. Yeah. We're going to take some music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like uh-huh. I was yeah. telling the guys, I was like, next tour, we're all learning instruments. like everybody got to yeah. learn a fucking instrument. Yeah. And at the end of the show, we are performing songs.
Yeah.
Like, that's inherently better than the show you're doing right now.
Yes. If I bomb yeah. for an hour straight, yeah. at least we got 15 yeah. minutes yeah. of music.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that music at the end was great. Even if it wasn't great, it was better than yeah. what was
there
before.
There we go, exactly. Yeah. Save myself.
By nature of being on YouTube, are you watching more yeah. YouTube? Like, are you taking inspiration from different creators that are maybe yeah. outside of comedy?
I was just watching a clip of your guys, the Instagram clip on like the loops.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
genius.
Yeah.
I was right. like, why aren't we doing that?
Right.
Like, why the fuck are we not doing that? Like, and I think that's what we have to do. The same way we're watching the UFC and going like, how do we apply those things? It's like, I even liked, we've tried to dabble in like the beginning of podcasts, like putting like cool, funny or interesting moments and then starting the pod.
Yeah.
But you had a great intro with Beast.
Yeah.
Right. It was really, yeah, it yeah. was really yeah, good. Yeah. And then like, so, but yeah, we should be analyzing what's happening in the space. And we do do this. What's happening in the space, who are being successful in the space, and then how can we utilize those things for what we do? And yeah, 100%. Like Beast is doing great stuff.
You just got to start giving away money.
Real talk.
Yeah.
Thanks. Play music and then give away $1 million.
Dude, $1 million to
giving
you.
Giving away money. Yeah. Almost got fucking Andrew Yang elected.
Right.
It's true. It's like that's how influential money is.
It's always worked.
Literally always never worked, doesn't man. Work.
Yeah.
Right? Like we stayed home for 2 years because they gave us $1,200.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, that's all it takes to keep all of the world home.
Just at home.
$1,200 is nothing. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I want to make one patron a millionaire.
That's
so good.
So we're going to give him or her $1 million.
Yeah.
And the only chance you have is if you're a patron of ours. It's like, wouldn't you sign up for $5 a month to watch your favorite podcast you're already watching for the chance to be a millionaire at the end of the year?
Of course.
So I'm like, do you think that we could increase our subscribers by over 1 million and then it's justified? It's a risk.
It's a risk.
Yeah.
Man. It's interesting.
But it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then worst comes worse, you get to give some kid $1 million. You
That'd
know?
Be nuts.
Dad's on dialysis or some shit, save his fucking life. Like, this is great.
I mean, that would be, again, you talk about like qualification, that would go everywhere.
Wouldn't that?
That story would go everywhere.
Yeah.
Andrew Schultz makes a kid a millionaire.
We'd probably talk about that.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Okay, so how would you guys, if I have this new special that's coming out, how would you guys release it?
I would probably...
If you could put it anywhere, there's no rules. What would you guys do?
I mean, I'm the most pro YouTube guy in the world.
Yeah, you interested in eyeballs or dollars?
Dollars chase eyeballs is what I'm thinking.
Dollars chase eyeballs.
Yeah. So eyeballs. Eyeballs, eyeballs, eyeballs.
YouTube.
Okay.
100%. Like, I think there's no question. It's like... it's.
But then how do I make back the 7 figures I was paid to do it? How do I pay back that investor? Just
is
buy
there
him
any
out?
Culture of there's no sponsored special? You don't want that.
Say it.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Here's the thing: it's like,
you know,
you spend 7 figures. Like, if there's a sponsor attached to it,
mm-hmm.
you make that back.
Could we get $1 million from that sponsor?
100%.
Yeah, I think so.
The right sponsor.
What'd Beast get for that sponsor for the Squid Game? Do you guys know?
I mean, I know the whole thing cost him $3 million, and I don't know what they paid him, but he covered his cost. So in my opinion, like
it's worth looking, right?
It's worth looking. It's worth exploring with like a SeatGeek or you work with Honey a lot. Like there, I would say like even a SeatGeek, I know it's like counterintuitive, but can you like pioneer the next version of what that experience
it's
is
like? It's
also
like which company wants to redefine what it means to release a comedy special?
Yes.
Because that has value to it.
Yes.
It's not just the dollars for the eyeballs.
Can you also
like that's a story for them to be like, oh no, like we're the company of the future.
Right.
100%.
So that has another line item
yeah.
on top of.
Yeah, and now every other comic that's putting out YouTube comedy specials, which is now a very popular way because you can build these audiences. Like, you get all the views and you get to build your YouTube.
Also, could
they're
you
gonna
like...
They're going to
want to... Yeah, for sure. Could you, like, do something crazy with either crowdfunding or, like, fractionalize the ownership of it?
Now we're getting
break
a little
that
crazy.
Down.
Right. So let's just say, let's get a little crazy here. Let's say 50% of this special, mm-hmm. the royalties that are generated by this special, whether through YouTube AdSense or if it gets syndicated, are up for sale. You buy in, you own a percentage of those royalties. Okay. So we're crowdfunding it now.
There's 10,000 opportunities to buy in.
And do we have a smart contract for this? Mm-hmm. Like, do we essentially NFT it?
I mean, I didn't want to say it, but let's say NFT.
Yeah, I'll say it.
We're in the crypto world now. We're in the metaverse.
The NFT word, I think, is bastardized. Like, I think we just got to look at it as tech, not a picture of a gorilla.
Agreed. Yeah. So let's say you fractionalize the ownership, and now the audience, the 21,000 patrons, get first dibs if they want to own a piece. Right now they get to own a piece. Now it goes out on YouTube and they feel a sense of ownership. They're executive producers of the new Schultz special.
Yeah.
Right. It's an active participation. It's a game. They're a part of it.
Yeah.
Now someone picks it up. I don't know, Netflix, someone, I don't know who else would pick it up and say, I want to syndicate that. I actually want that now behind our paywall as an option, Amazon, Hulu, something like that.
Interesting.
Those royalties then go out through and that 50% of those royalties get distributed to who bought in.
Now
they're incentivized to share the special. Because they want it to do better on YouTube. They want more people to see it.
They're a part of it.
So you just took your team who you said could do anything and you made them marketing.
Yeah. I like this. Now we just have to prove that it can make the money back. Now, how do we make... We're not going to make 7 figures easily on YouTube revenue for one video.
No.
So we're needing a sponsor.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We're going to need to
There's an element of this crowdfund, right?
But you can be transparent about that. That's like, this is the amount we need to make. Like, we have to make seven figures.
Okay, now here's another question. What is the amount that you hear a special made that's not through Netflix or HBO or one of these things that you hear that makes you go, what? What the fuck? What the fuck happened? What is that number?
How much did Dave Chappelle make for his Netflix specials?
I think he's got like three for like 60 million.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
But he did it through Netflix.
Yeah.
What if it was not through Netflix? It was just, you saw it on YouTube and then there was a bunch of other like monetization strategies around it. What number makes you go, how did they make this amount?
5 million.
Five.
I would be like, wow.
That's impressive.
That's impressive. Yeah.
10 is the number I think is the one that makes me go, what?
Yeah.
But five is like, huh?
Five's like, damn, they did something.
And then 10 is like, what is going on, right?
Yeah. But again, like you're the people who are 10. In charge, like they're your audience and you can turn to them and say like, we're trying to do this.
Yeah.
But it's a risk, of course, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's a risk, but you could mitigate the risk with a sponsor or with some other plan, but you got to take some risks.
I'm all about
throw some shit
the
out
risk.
There and be Love like, the let's risk. See how this goes.
Love the risk. I just have, we did it with a production company who's been great. So I want them to be, you know, part of this.
Sure.
And I also want to make sure that they make their money back because they took a risk on me, you know? This is interesting. This is, I don't know. We got to just do something different with it. That's the fun thing. It's not going to be fun if we do the same thing we've always done.
Agreed.
Yeah.
We got to do something crazy.
Mm-hmm. Also, if you create a habit of it over time, it could really, really grow.
What do you mean by that?
Like, let's say this is a model. You figure out some sort of new model.
Yeah.
Think about that model 5-10 years down the line. If you've done it again and again and again, and you have repeat customers, there is a musician who's been releasing all of her music videos as NFTs, and she's not a huge musician.
Mm.
But if you look at her track record of like, it's like exponentially growing every time she sells a music video.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Because the culture is growing that it's like, this is how we as a community do it.
Support her.
Now that will eventually have diminishing returns.
Yes, sure.
Because like, I always wondered this with artists, like why when an artist gets popular, do people not kill them? Right?
I've never wondered that.
I've never thought of
it. No, like, like who's like a really popular artist?
Who's alive?
Yeah.
Like an artist, like a painter?
Yeah. Or let's say it's back in the day, like, and Picasso's still painting.
Okay.
Right? And you just bought a Picasso.
Sure.
Kill him.
Right, because it gets more valuable.
There's no more Picassos.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? Like, it's rare. You have to wait until Picasso's hits a level where you're like, holy shit, this guy's the truth.
Mm.
And then you kill him, and now every one of those Picassos is so valuable.
I think there's an overwhelming feeling around the logistics of killing someone. That I think stops that.
Yeah. I think you're overestimating.
Yeah. I think if you're willing to do
killed for less.
If you're at a point in your life where you could afford a Picasso.
Yeah.
And you're also interested in killing.
Yeah.
I think you're a rare breed.
Yeah.
And
I think you'd be surprised how many people that own Picassos have actually murdered people. Killed? I actually make the argument that they've killed way more than the rest of us.
Yeah.
Very comfortable with killing.
Okay, all right.
Just lay off 50,000 people on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
Those are murderers.
All right. Okay.
Art collectors are murderers.
Okay.
So just do the right killing.
Mm.
Right.
Right?
Be strategic at least.
Yeah.
Now, you shouldn't murder. But...
That's good. I'm glad you said
that. We're gonna cold open with that.
Yeah. You shouldn't murder, but I'm just saying, like, don't we do this all the time? Like oil gets expensive and then we go murder a bunch of people. And it's just like, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
It's like your painting is cheap.
So you're
break his hand. Don't murder him. Break his hand.
The risk of doing this hand. Model is that you might get killed.
Murdered.
Yeah, you might get killed.
So your concern here is that you will
I'm concerned they're gonna murder this girl.
The NFT musician.
I'm certain they're going to murder her because eventually she's making too many. It's like if they keep making too many Bored Apes, somebody's got to go, right? Like they're like, we're going to make some more apes. Like, are we though?
You got an ape?
No.
You know,
you're
on
the NFT.
I'm not against it. Yeah. I think what they've done is absolutely brilliant, to be honest with you.
But that's also, NFTs are all social proof.
Yeah,
it's
a blue check.
Yeah.
This is no different, right? And we need social proof. I'm wearing a fucking Rolex, right?
There's
no different, right?
I noticed that.
See, you don't know
at this table with you.
Wow. But wait, what is that watch right there?
This is a Samsung Galaxy Watch 2.
You even got an Apple Watch, buddy. Come on. What's going on over here?
Well, you know.
We may or may not be sponsored.
Samsung, let's go. Love Samsung. Samsung. My favorite brand. Favorite brand. Best brand in the world. Got it.